far, far, far too long, if you ask me. Do you know, it shows what a consummate professional Phil Leonard actually is, because I'd actually left his channel open throughout the news. He could have said anything. Could have been a nightmare. Could be a disaster. Could have actually been commenting on all sorts of things regarding to the news. But no, ever the professional, ever the pro, he kept the line quiet. He was all sorted through. He didn't burst in with any, "Dush, these limeys, they don't know what they're doing," etc. Sorry, that was a cod accent there. Maybe
well, I was taken by the news story about how much people at work, how much time they spend going through their own personal email and work on the computer, because I heard that, and I was thinking to myself when I heard that, gee, I wonder if I should be booking flights right now or paying closer attention to the news in case you ask me about it.
Yeah, exactly. But don't worry, we try to leave those 2 minutes of unremitting misery every hour to kind of just percolate in their own way. Although, as we commented actually in the studio, thankfully our microphones weren't actually live at the present, otherwise we would have had an interesting interaction. Rory and myself were saying, wouldn't it be nice if, you know, given that his background is Turkish, he's got a lot of Turkish blood in him in the sort of history, maybe Boris Johnson could actually go over and sort out all this Turkish question. You know, I mean, he's doing such a great job. And as indeed, Rory, you rightly said, taking Dominic Cummings away, he probably sort of recommended that they should leave in any case. It's the whole message. Anyway, that's the Midweek Drive Morning Edition does global politics, Phil, with a vengeance. Normally, Rory, this time we turn to Gabriella in Gibraltar and say, time for the weather for Lincoln, England from Gibraltar. But Gabriella's in New York, and she was at Ellis Island, as we said last night. You know, didn't connect with us, but that's by the by. At least we spoke through the medium of messages, etc. Phil, that means you're up. You're off the bench. You're our keen guy. What's the weather for Lincoln from Los Angeles?
Well, I think the weather for Lincoln would be the same whether it's from Los Angeles or anywhere else, Alex, quite frankly.
I don't know. Butterflies, wings.
It looks like the day is going to prove to be mostly sunny. Now, I'm a little bit, rusty. In terms of my conversion, it's looking like you're going to have a high of 58 degrees American Fahrenheit, which I think is right around 9 degrees centigrade. So that seems a little cool to me. That seems like sweater weather. But we're looking at 0% precipitation and some winds, but not that strong, 20 kilometers an hour.
Kilometers. The detail breakdown.
You see, exactly. It proves that at the end of the day, it's a go-to person when it comes for all sorts of elements and pieces. Rory, I know you stopped doing the Midweek Drive evening editions because we couldn't fit you in anymore. But it's just a way forward. I mean, next week, Sam Stone, David J. Howe, it's all sort of things happening there. But you're well aware that one of the things that Robin Pierce actually provides within that whole sequence is, of course, his Contributor of the Show Award, yes? Now, yesterday, of course, we decided that it was important for the reasons of fairness to ensure that Phil Leonis was actually... We changed his slot. We changed his schedule. It was still sort of 6:30-ish our time, 10:30 a.m. later. But he didn't sort of stick around to the end of the show. That's because it went to Robin Pierce. And this was actually Robin's particular line at the end of the show.
The MVP award this week. I agree with you. It's Phil Leonis. Because that man is just so entertaining. And the only reason that I'm giving it to Phil Leonis is that he marginally knows the head of New Alex in the studio, because New Alex is new to all this, and I'm very wary of frightening him off.
Siren Radio 107.3 FM.
And that new Alex, of course, was indeed Alexander, who preferred to be referred to as Alex, or indeed New Alex, as opposed to, I don't know, chronologically gifted Alex.
Alex, I believe New Alex deserves it, especially in the wake of me realizing my horrible math. I've now double-checked my work, and I think I said that you're looking at a high of 9 degrees. That is wrong. That's dead wrong. That will be your low. You're looking at a balmy high of 14 degrees,
whoa,
and it's going to stay right around 14 for the next week high. But enjoy, get out there and enjoy the sunshine, because a lot of rain is coming. At least 6 of the next 7 days, you're in for rain. So get out there, enjoy your Friday, enjoy it responsibly, and get some of that wonderful vitamin D.
See, this is a enjoy it responsibly. It's what you would do in Emma Street on a regular basis. Enjoy your Fridays responsibly.
It is, actually, very responsibly. Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, as you can hear, Emma has now arrived. Rory has actually arrived. We're gradually getting people together. I know Polly Donaldson wasn't able to make it. I thought Eleanor would, but she's not. You know, obviously, I don't know. She's in the same seminar. Everything's sorted through. And just can't, whatever. Still, life continues. Emma, any little questions you'd like to put to Phil Leonis at this stage as he's joined us for the show? Because Gabriella's in New York.
She's in New York? Wow, very nice.
Fuff, exactly. That's it. Rory, let's talk about your stomach upside in Las Vegas, because as you said, you didn't think you'd spoken to Phil Leonis, or indeed, as Robin Pierce says, Linus. Hopefully, I haven't been getting his name incorrect all these years. I mean, you know, it's very dreadful. I mean,
why should you be like Dean Haglund, for example? Who has never pronounced my name correctly in 12 years of doing a podcast.
Yeah, well, I sense the bitterness. Let it go, Phil. Let it go. Chemistry is good.
At our big Leif Erikson Day show, I was able to share with the audience that not only am I an American of Nordic descent, and we were celebrating the contributions made by such Americans, but my last name, Leonis, very rare indeed. In fact, I've always known that if I met anyone named Leonis, I could be certain of two things. One, they would ask me for money, and two, we would be related. It's that rare a name because, you see, it was made up by my father's grandfather, who was, in fact, Eric Peterson. So, you know, when the name's made up and then misspelled by the county clerk who actually registers the phony name, I feel all pronunciations are fair game. At that point.
And that's what makes America great, really. That's that enables them to take back control in so
many
ways.
Exactly, exactly. Where we have a president who calls himself Donald Trump, even though his name, Drumpf. And that's not a joke, of course. His real last name is Drumpf.
Phil, I know in terms of hilarity, as Robin was actually saying there, even your good self knows that ultimately the president of the United States, POTUS, POTUS, president of the United States, it's not a joking matter. Anyway, I just wanted to actually say that as the time reaches 9.5 minutes past 8 o'clock this side of the Atlantic. So Rory, I thought you'd actually spoken to Phil since you'd had this sort of little tummy upset, etc.
No, I have not spoken to Phil since I've been to America, which was defined by 2 weeks of me being horribly, horribly ill until I got to Los Angeles, in which I felt pretty much fine. So there you go, Phil.
Well, I heard about, well, that's good. So that means you did, in fact, what happened in Vegas did stay in Vegas. As the adage goes.
Yeah, the Luxor food poisoning definitely stayed in Vegas and a little bit after that as well.
Luxor.
I've loved hearing about this twice.
It has been good, hasn't it? I thought it was good. And listen.
You know, Luxor sounds like something you take for food poisoning. Quite frankly.
Oh, no, that's just one of the hotels in Las Vegas.
No, I know, but it does sound like a medication. Like,
that was probably your first sign.
Use Luxor for, you know, intestinal distress. But use it, again, responsibly, please.
As with Fridays. Excellent news, Phil. We have another debut co-presenter on the program. Just as I was actually sort of saying, Emma, and again, you attest to this, where is she? What's happening? Literally. So there, you can play back the podcast. Eleanor Lodge, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Thank you. Sorry for being late.
That's all right. Eleanor is from that wonderful part of the world, Phil, called Beverly. No, not Beverly. It's not Beverly. It's Wet Wang.
Yeah.
Wet Wang. I was confusing you with respect to politics. Now, Phil, when you're next over in Britain with Lily, clearly, what better way to kind of celebrate a year, 2 years of wonderful married life, etc., than heading off to Wet Wang in Yorkshire? Isn't that right, Eleanor?
Yes, yeah. It's a lovely little part of the country. It's a very small little place, but it's a really nice little place to visit. So Yorkshire in general is a lovely place to visit.
It's God's own country. It is the Texas of England in so many ways. And I know that Phil Wright at this moment will probably be sort of juggling his routine and actually finding out more about Wet Wang, which is great. Phil, would you like to formally, as you are indeed our senior telephonic co-presenter and co-host from Los Angeles today, would you like to welcome Eleanor Lodge from Wet Wang, second year undergraduate reading journalism and public relations at the University of Lincoln, to the program?
So apparently, Wet Wang has a population of little more than 750 people, 750 souls. So we have a sizable percentage of the population of Wet Wang in studio for this broadcast. That's extraordinary.
But
Eleanor, as a duly designated delegate from Wet Wang, welcome to the Midweek Drive.
Thank you.
Very good. Open up a whole range of things. I feel as though my work is almost complete. I would have said the same about Emma, but obviously Lincoln has more people than Wet Wang. Considerably more, actually.
Yeah.
And don't get me started on Milton Keynes, because it's a different line, Rory.
Yeah.
It is Milton Keynes, or is it more Bedfordshire?
It's more Bedfordshire.
It's more Bedfordshire.
But there's still a lot of people around.
Of course. Coming up, the chance for Phil Lianus / Linus to actually speak in person once again to Richard Fitzwilliams about the London Film Festival, the 70th anniversary of The Third Man, 70 years, almost as young as yourself, Rory, which is great, since Orson Welles did his wonderful Zither, and all sorts of other things were happening. Plus, I think the Goldfinch is coming together as well. But to take us around to that, I'm very tempted to actually go for an American theme, even though we featured this last night, and it's by Red Box, because I just like saying, deviate to contemplate this audiovisual opiate.
Go drum, go down, sound of sound. All these pieces understand.
the halcyon days of the 20th century, the 1980s, where we'd spin round and round the red box with Ronald Reagan in the presidency. All this peace and understanding, Phil. You're probably too young to remember red box. Or did it cross the Atlantic?
I feel like I've heard that before, yes. But then again, I try not to remember my worst nightmares.
Well, the good thing is that not only have we got a terrific trio in the studio of Emma, of Eleanor, and Rory, all the same year reading journalism and public relations, journalism and creative writing, and... Is it journalism and creative writing? It is journalism and creative writing. Yes, sorry, I thought the researcher had let us down. And obviously, communications and public relations. Yay! We've also got online now a man who's so busy dealing with his Channel 5 royal commitments. More movies coming out for Channel 5 from Richard Fitzwilliams. Can we say anything else, Richard? Or is it just a case of, shh, it'll happen sometime when we talk about the royals abroad?
Well, the royals at war, actually.
Oh, royals at war?
Yes,
oh!
During the Second World War, it was absolutely fascinating. May I just say hello, a very, very special hello to Phil, and how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, thank you, Richard. It's been too long. I had a summer of eye surgeries, getting my eyesight restored, and I couldn't be happier to be here with you, especially as I understand you're going to be discussing one of my all-time favorite films, The Third Man at 70 Years of Age.
It's absolutely the case, and I have to say, one of my all-time favorites. I mean, it's a masterpiece. I can't remember how many times I've seen it. And I'm hoping that with this restoration of 70 years and so forth, I mean, that we will get a younger generation to go and see a movie that... was absolutely extraordinary. I mean,
I would think if you were to put up there the side by side the greatest contributions made in collaboration by and between the United Kingdom and the United States of America, probably winning two world wars would be up there. But equally important in my eyes is the collaboration that was The Third Man.
No, I totally agree. Those wars, yes, most certainly. But when it comes to the director Carol Reed, and when it comes to a certain script, of course, I have to say that I remember one of the most fascinating interviews I ever saw on television was with Orson Welles, who implied, without saying, that the script of The Third Man had, of course, the famous, we'll be discussing it, scene on the wheel and the cuckoo clock. And who had actually thought that quote up? And Wells was absolutely magical when he was being interviewed. And would you believe it? He just placed into my mind the thought that it was he who could have been responsible for that famous scene. I mean, it was absolutely riveting to see this outrageous claim, because, of course, he was outrageous and larger than life. And I have to say that very, very few films have been as good as The Third Man, and had the, Graham Greene's responsibility for the screenplay. But I was most intrigued to see Wells, and also to see how, when Wells was interviewed, the interviewer dared to suggest that something Wells did was imperfect. And I have never seen this before, that he was actually laughed at. Wells started laughing at him. There's nothing more disconcerting. It's never happened to me, and I'm sure it's never happened to you, to be literally laughed at. It was about the imperfections of Wells's Othello.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Well, Wells's relationship to The Third Man is fascinating. He was at the time, you know, there have been a lot of rumors in scholarly circles that Wells had far more influence on the film than he really did. And in fact, he was coming off a terrible heartbreak by all accounts, spent virtually the entire shooting of The Third Man locked in his hotel room, in his hotel suite. And it happened to be an adjoining suite to Alida Valli, to the leading lady. And he never, ever bothered to meet her. He was so licking his wounds over the broken heart he traveled to Europe with, of a romance gone wrong. So this famed Lothario, Orson Welles, didn't even introduce himself to his leading lady. And why this matters is that when Orson Welles got older in life, he actually caught a screening of The Third Man and fell head over heels in love with the leading lady, and never making a play for her was one of the great regrets of his life.
Oh, it's a lovely story that you could just imagine it. The version I heard about Welles and The Third Man was that scenes that in which he appears were shot at the end of the film. Now, that left Welles, shall we say, free to renegotiate his contract and also ensure that there were proper sewers built in places that he felt easy with and so forth. He could more or less control it once it had, it couldn't finish without him, and there he was, free to negotiate. Fascinating, fascinating figure, and the character of Harry Lime. I do think that we've begun perhaps on a scholarly note, and I must ask those in the studio whether they've seen The Third Man or intend to, by the way. It really is an extraordinary film directed by Carol Reed, set in post-war Vienna. Holly Martins, played unforgettably by Joseph Cotten, arrives in Vienna intending to be given a job, he believes, by his friend Harry Lime, who he discovers is dead, except that he's not. He's played by Orson Welles, who briefly appears in the film, but unforgettably so. Lime's funeral is attended by Martins, and also Major Calloway, played a remarkable performance just by Trevor Howard, who's a major in the British sector. It's divided into the Russians, the Americans, the French, and the British, and tells him Lime is a criminal. But one of the British Council's figures in Vienna, played by Wilfred Hyde White, asks Martins to give a lecture. That in itself is perhaps the funniest lecture I've ever seen on a screen. When he does give it, then he puts him up. So as he stays, he starts meeting Lime's compatriots and also the woman who, Anna, who acts at a theatre in Vienna, who Lime was in love with. And he starts piecing together a puzzle which proves, firstly, that Lime didn't die, and secondly, what trade he was involved in, and also we discover his relationship with Anna and how the plot develops. They intend to catch him, and will he be caught? If so, under what circumstances? And if ever there was a film where an actor who appears so fleetingly is able to have such a magical influence on what we see and on our memory. I mean, you can think back and certain scenes absolutely indelibly impressed in your memory. It's Orson Welles' Harry Lime, because he's unbelievably likable for a penicillin smuggler when antibiotics are in short supply, and he's siphoning off the penicillin so that people are dying in dreadful circumstances in hospitals. And yet, when he finally meets Martins, they go up together on the Prater, the great wheel in Vienna, something I must say I have often seen but never done and have no intention of. It's not quite my thing. But
oh, Richard, please, you know it was one of the highlights of the Timothy Dalton James Bond movie, The Living Daylights, that wheel in Vienna. I mean, you've got to go there. You have to.
Oh, that is true. It was actually a highlight for Timothy Dalton. That he was getting to go. In interviews, he said, I got to go on the wheel where Harry Lime and Holly Martins had their conversation. But, Alex, it's not just that reference.
Mm-hmm.
An assassin who kills one of James Bond's contacts, mm-hmm, there at the cafe by the wheel is posing as a balloon vendor, and he says, a balloon, mein Herr?
Exactly.
It's directly out of The Third Man. So Bond tips its hat at The Third Man, which is so appropriate because in addition to being a film noir and a post-war romantic tragedy, and in addition to being one of the funniest films ever, it is a prototypical spy film. third.
Exactly.
And the tension, the atmosphere of this movie,
particularly the sewers at the end, the running through the sewers.
It could work on several levels, yes, as you say, film noir, docudrama in certain scenes, and certainly the way Vienna becomes, or Vienna, much of it in ruins, becomes a star of this film, and also magnetic is the word to describe Harry Lime, as well as his performance with Lime, because it really, really is extraordinary. But the bit of script when they go up on the wheel, I would so recommend.
You're swooning, Richard. You're verbally swooning. Let's take up that little point you mentioned earlier about the team in the studio who have been using their devices to find out more about the third man as you've been engaging in dialogue. Let's go to Rory first, a man who, unlike yourself, Richard, has managed to find time to see the Joker this week. Although, as you said, Rory, don't go if you actually want to have an upbeat movie and you're looking it's not one
really,
of those.
Really, I thought it was a comedy.
That's very true. Rory, will you be checking out The Third Man?
Well, it seemed like quite a big deal when it came out.
70 years ago.
70 years
70
ago.
Years.
Oh, wow.
70 Los Angeles years
and,
ago.
And I don't know a lot about post-war Vienna. So well, if this is a kind of a dive into that sort of world. Mm-hmm. Then it's
also the world of the world the various characters inhabit. I've just suddenly realised we've committed the heresy of discussing the film without mentioning its theme.
The zither.
Once you've heard it, you will never forget it.
Well, may I just point out that that was the song that my now wife, Lily, chose to enter to as her wedding march.
Wow.
How marvelous.
Theme.
That is glorious.
Had you only scheduled at a different time of the year, I could have accepted your invitation and been there. Never mind.
Oh, my goodness. You had a year warning.
I know.
But I not to get too corny about it, but as she approached listening to that music, I realized how appropriate it was for me because I was there was the man I was before I met Lily. There is the man that I had been while courting Lily, and now that I was marrying her, I was truly becoming a third man.
Eleanor is choking up at this moment in time.
Oh, that's a wonderful surprise that you've included in the...
He always brings us wonderful surprises, Richard. That's why he's on the show, like yourself. Eleanor, would you be actually checking out The Third Man, or have you seen it as yet?
I haven't, no, but I definitely would. It's got 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
If you've got 99% on Rotten Tomatoes...
Yes, I just like to shoot the person who knocked it off 100%.
Or Tomatoes, let's face it, we have an American Online. Let's not be sort of biased in terms of the use of the English language here. Emma?
I'll be checking it out. I haven't seen it. A bit before my time.
There we have it. Okay, London Film Festival.
And a very, very quick mention of Robert Kraska's cinematography. I mean,
visually,
it's amazing. Really?
There was no film that looked like it at the time. It was the first film ever to shoot on location at night, watering down the streets and the buildings with fire hoses so that the lights would reflect in the water. No film ever looked like that. And the truth is, no film today could hope to look like it. It is both of a time and it is timeless. It is one of the very most beautifully photographed
films. I'm sure that with a little bit of post-production, a director's cut of The Lady Killers could actually sort of match it, which is the other little bone to pick I actually have with yourself, Richard, because once again it seems the London Film Festival has omitted to invite the director and cast of The Lady Killers to actually be part of the this Oktoberfest in London. I mean, have a word with the necessary people, please.
Well, we didn't ask. I mean, it's not like... It's not like they even knew we might have wanted to go, Alec.
I don't know. I'm
grieved to hear it. It's been a very... What I've seen of it, I have to say, I mean, the thing is, with this documentary and with reviews generally and also some writing and so forth, it's really a film festival You can either have a binge, which I haven't been able to, I'm afraid, or you can dip in, and I have dipped in, and I mean, it has been absolutely fascinating. I do love them because films are screened as they should. I can even hear what's on the screen and the various ideas, for example. All of it's central London, and the fact they've got an Embankment Gardens special cinema for some of the movies. I mean, it really, really, from Portrait of a Lady on Fire to A Marriage Story, the new Noam Baumbach, I mean, just unbelievably good with Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver. Really, really on top form. I do expect awards for that. And from Just Mercy, which was, I thought, rather an interesting movie, we've got I've got Official Secrets with Keira Knightley. I don't think Alex has heard of Keira Knightley.
She is, as you know, probably the best actress this side of Lily Hollywood the world has ever known. I mean, that's at the bottom line. Richard, before we progress too much, I noticed that 9 hours ago, Ben Lewis and myself both liked the same Facebook post in which it is said, fascinating research for ITV Channel 5 documentary, Royals During the War. And look, there is Richard actually being interviewed by a camera crew at the In and Out Club.
Yes, it's quite extraordinary, Phil. You know that they could have chosen anywhere, and for some reason they chose my club.
It's a Brexit number, obviously. Are you in? Are you out? You know, amazing.
Well, on the subject of Brexit, I have to say there was one quote that I must just mention, which when France fell and Britain was alone in the Second World War, George VI said that he was extremely relieved. He didn't have to pamper or be polite to his allies anymore. If all
I always thought George got on very well with Joe Stalin. I thought he was bosom buddies, basically. I mean, obviously, you know, Stalin had a certain issue with respect to some of the royals that were kind of distantly connected, I believe, the revolution.
There might have been a connection there, and yes, there might indeed. In fact, it was George V who shamefully did not give refuge to his cousins, the Russian royal family, and, well, what happened is, of course, shameful and truly tragic. But nonetheless, it was absolutely fascinating. And also these larger-than-life royal figures, for example, Lord Mountbatten, Philip's uncle, that all this talk constantly and endlessly with his parents, he's in one of them in a Playboy in Monte Carlo, and his mother so ill, the fact that Philip Mountbatten didn't have money and had well casts offs and all the rest of it. He had one figure, and his uncle was Lord Mountbatten. If you had the connection with someone who was probably the vainest man in England, and somebody who not only was superb at public relations and self-publicity, but also thoroughly enjoyed it and was extremely good at it. And I must tell Philip, who will probably know the story, that when Mountbatten's ship, the Kelly, went down off Crete, Well, you'd have thought that a disaster for most, but not at all. He decided to make In Which We Serve, where his speeches, word for word, to the Kelly's crew, were given to Noel Coward, who was slightly camp, I have to say, to be a
Noel
captain.
Coward? Slightly camp? Good heavens, Richard.
Just slightly, but nonetheless, the film has become a classic, and it's
that kind of shocky scenario which will say that he wasn't actually channeling his inner Marlon Brando-esque realism when he was actually the villain in The Italian Job. I mean, Noel Coward, slightly camp, honestly.
Well, it's an extraordinary thought, but in fact, if you went to stay with the Mountbattens at Broadlands, their country home, you almost certainly would be shown it. I mean, Mountbatten, he was extraordinary, and he was effective. The Queen Mother intensely disliked him and distrusted him. I knew, oddly enough, his private secretary who was with him, Admiral Sir Ronald Brockman, an amazing figure who has, if you look him up on online, you'll see he has almost all the decorations you could possibly get for someone at that level. It's absolutely fascinating. And he worked for Mountbatten. If you didn't get on with Mountbatten and crossed him, you didn't get far in many circumstances. Mm. Mountbatten's father was German, Prince Louis of Battenberg, and because of his antecedents, he'd had to resign as first sea lord. 40 years later, it was Mountbatten who was first sea lord. And not only that, but he climbed high everywhere until his tragic assassination.
Well, and Prince Charles is still recovering, and if it hadn't been for looking so sad at the funeral, they probably wouldn't have captured the heart of Diana, and we would have had a whole new alternate reality emerging.
My goodness me, what a different world that would have been for the Royal Watcher. Indeed, it would. No, it was fascinating doing that, but also standing alone at that time, and also the relationship with America, and how the 1935 Act, which kept America out of the European War, paralyzed Roosevelt. And what he could do, I mean, Phil will probably remember the scene in The Darkest Hour, this almost unbelievable scene where Churchill talks to Roosevelt, and Britain has already bought some military equipment, and there's no way it can now be supplied. And Roosevelt actually suggests horses take it over the border into Canada. You may remember this unbelievable scene, and I checked its validity, and it was true.
Outrageously wonderful. You know, we've lost the Goldfinch. They've just gone completely, and we're going to be losing Phil Leonis because it's now in Los Angeles time, coming up to 23 minutes to 1 o'clock in the morning. Phil, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program today?
Oh, of course. This was great fun.
I'm always conscious.
I never have more fun than this.
What? Yes, I don't know about that. I mean, at the end of the day, at least we got a chance to speak to a resident of Wet Wang, representative of Wet Wang, which is wonderful. And will you be coming back again? That's Phil Linus,
by
the way.
Oh, you must come back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
Good. That's fine. Put the last two questions to Richard Fitzwilliams, and then we can get off to Newcastle and move on to Ada Lennox. So would you like to just put those two questions, Phil? Please, Phil Linus, as your last task on the programme today from L.A.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link on the midweek drive this
morning?
Oh,
it's been absolutely wonderful talking, and also remembering scenes from The Third Man. When you talk about it, you know, they flash in and out of the memory, and it's been this, and also
personally, Richard, I think you should watch it on a nice little mobile phone device to get a full sort of thing on the whole system.
I've got it here.
The line that's running through my mind right now is, goodness, how awkward. Is that what you say when someone dies? Goodness, how awkward.
It's British.
I look forward to speaking with you again very soon, Richard.
I do hope so. I do hope so. We've missed the Goldfinch, but then we haven't perhaps...
You can't squeeze in a Goldfinch and Mountbatten. There's just not room in the ship. It'll sink. Richard, take care.
Well, the Goldfinch has, and there are reasons for it.
No. Don't forget The Joker, but not if you actually want a feel-good movie. Onwards. Tessa Snart's Tune of the Week, coming up now.
See the bluest seas, warm my toes on the whitest beach, climb to the top of a mountain that I never thought I'd reach, picked up my favorite cowboy boots down in Tennessee, but if you ain't there, I know where I'd rather be, cause anywhere you ain't by my side ain't home to me. climbed to the top of a mountain that I never thought I'd reach. Picked up my favorite cowboy boots down in Tennessee. But if you ain't there, I know where I'd rather be. 'Cause anywhere you ain't by my side and home to me.
The band are called Remember Monday. The tune selected by Tessa Snart last night, of course, Home to Me by Remember Monday, the reprise, which came nowhere in Robin Pierce's suggestion. It was way below Els Bailey. Oh, I'm sorry, some might say rightly so. Ian Lennox, you caught most of that in Newcastle, down the telephone line, the perfect way to actually judge songs. In fact, I'm amazed we don't actually use this at Eurovision, really. Forget all this high technology. Just simply get the artists to play the songs down the phone line. Make a decision on that. It was good enough for, you know, the GPO, when they used to have a sort of disc service that you could dial up and listen to contemporary tunes on. Back in the day.
Really? Did they do that?
They used to do that, exactly. It was that and the speaking clock as very important sort of aspects of British culture. What did you make of Remember Monday and Home to Me?
I don't really know, really. It didn't sound very different from a lot of other sort of records of its time.
I think we'll just leave it there. Because in the studio, Ian, you'll be delighted to know that in addition to Emma Street, yay, Emma!
Yay!
Yay! currently having to wrestle with all sorts of challenges with respect to Maurizio Pochettino. And I was all set in the seminar this week to actually start really going for the whole notion of Brighton and sort of taking the sort of Ben Lewis for 3-0. And, of course, the 7-2 sort of Bayern Munich result.
I'm taking a break from football.
Not this week. Ask him what happened at Man City this weekend.
Yeah, of course.
How can I forget?
Yeah, you go down that line and you think, yes, yeah, okay.
Ask them what happened to Man United.
Yeah, you see, this is it. You know, Newcastle getting a win, beating them 1-0 with one of the youngest Toonami people ever. A young man who actually plays with his brother in the side as well. So, I mean, is it all a case of Steve Bruce is our boy now and all's well with Michael Ashley, and let's face it, we don't want to end up like Sunderland?
I think so. One weekend won't change all that, I don't think.
Anyway, the important thing is, in addition to that, and the return of Rory, I don't care about football because I'm from Bedfordshire, McGowan, in the studio, sorted out, Rory's with us. We also have newbie Eleanor Lodge from a place I don't think you may have ever been to, Ian, although when you were actually doing location reports for Tyne Tees Television, actually, Eleanor, does Tyne Tees reach as far as Wet Wang? Are you more Yorkshire TV girl?
We're Yorkshire TV.
Yorkshire TV. Yeah. Eleanor Lodge from Wet Wang.
No, I never heard that one. We call it North Yorkshire.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's more East Riding, isn't
it? Sounds like an abbreviation of West Wing to me.
No, it's sort of, yeah, it's East Riding, but it's close to the North Yorkshire border.
Okay.
So it's not too far.
And according to Phil Dearness, Eleanor does represent 1/750th of the population of Wet Wang. So, yeah, it's good.
And the boat, is she?
And as you know, Ian, because...
The West Wang Council.
No, Wet Wang, not West Wang.
Wet Wang.
They had a very famous...
Does it rain a lot?
Does it rain a lot?
It does.
And one of their famous mayors was, of course, Richard Whiteley, who for many years, whilst he was alive, of course, because I don't think you have any dead mayors, at least not that, he was the mayor of Wet Wang.
Was he?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, it falls to yourself, Ian, as you're well aware in terms of actually looking through the credentials and so on, that when we have a newbie on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, they need to be grilled in a journalistic way, in the only way that a Guardian journalist can actually do. So it's over to your good self, Ian Lennox, to actually quiz Eleanor Lodge about life, the universe, what it's like actually reading journalism and public relations at the University of Lincoln, how Wet Wang can celebrate the world, all of those kind of things. Over to you, Ian. Ask the question.
Well, this is your chance to become the second most famous inhabitant of Wet Wang. I presume you're a first year university, is that right?
No, I'm second year.
What are you studying?
Journalism and public relations.
Right. How are you finding it?
Good, thank you. Yeah, good. Just trying to...
Are you going to do shorthand?
No, I'm not doing shorthand. I did start trying to do it in first year, but with doing the joint course, it all got a bit much, so I gave it up.
Ah, so I right.
Focus on other things.
Okay, and do you intend to become a journalist when you finish your course, or are you into something else?
I'm sort of undecided at the minute. I'm sort of leaning more towards public relations,
right.
But we'll see how things go. Just going to try and get as much work experience in both areas and see which one I prefer.
When I was teaching at Sunderland, I used to tell the students there that... they're actually competing against all the other people in their class because they were going to compete for jobs eventually.
Yes.
So the thing to do...
As I look at...
Yes.
Did I hear the sound of a punch on somebody's nose there?
Emma, I've told you, keep your violent tendencies to one side.
No,
you know?
Sorry.
Anyway, leave the Tottenham at the door, okay?
Yeah. One of the things that you should be doing during your time there is to make yourself as saleable as possible to... prospective employers. Therefore, you should try and get every job that you can. You should show yourself to be keen and ambitious and willing to work hard and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
By what you do, you know, outside the actual study of the course. You know, when I was teaching, I had a young Indian guy came up to me. He was always asking most pertinent questions, and sometimes I didn't have the answer. But anyway, he's rather rude in that way. But I asked him what he was going to do when he finished. When he got his degree, and he said he wanted to become a foreign correspondent, which is sort of the blue ribbon job, you know, in journalism, one of them anyway. Mm-hmm. And I said, rather patronizing, I said, oh, and what have you done to try and achieve that ambition so far? And he said, on my own accord, he said, I went off to Afghanistan. I said, what? I said, did he go via Pakistan? And he said, oh, no, he said, they would let me in, but they wouldn't let me out. He was Indian, you see. Mm-hmm. And not only had he gone to Afghanistan, he hadn't just stayed in the capital or anything like that. He'd gone off into the hills and the wild bits. And I thought, if that boy come to me asking for a job, that would have been a very, very big incentive for me to give him one.
Yeah.
Because he's shown such initiative. I'm just giving this as a sort of...
I think that's superb, Ian. I
mean, example.
It's like, you know, learning from, you know, the great ancient one in Tyneside.
I think we should have him for a guest lecture.
I'm certainly ancient, not great, though.
Listen, getting Ian, you know, to cross the border from Tyneside to Wearside is difficult enough without sort of going through Yorkshire and to Lincoln as well. I mean, it's a
dynamo. I drive with my eyes closed.
I can't believe you went to Afghanistan. I do love a journalist with no sense of self-preservation.
Well said. I do wish I could actually read on air the line that you posted with respect to Facebook in terms of grammar and lowercase, etc. Unfortunately,
oh,
I can't.
Oh, yeah,
you got to do that, though. But actually, it certainly demonstrates the importance of capitalisation, I think.
It does. This is why we need Ian down here.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you need the horse.
Just to take it through those lines alone, I mean, it's outrageously wonderful. Ian, I'm going to give you another little mini task now. It's just a quick selection because we weren't sure which one to go for. And in the end, Eleanor actually said it's our first show, so make it a lucky dip. So I'm going to give you a few choices of names, and you need to select the one that appeals most. Chocolate, the city, girls, settle down, or robbers. That's chocolate, the city, girls, settle down, or robbers.
I think I'd go for girls. I used to remember those.
Okay, then, the 1975 girls.
Cheating!
And according to a recent survey, in terms of confidence, British men reach peak confidence before women, before girls from that point of view. Interesting. We'll be talking about this in the second hour. But Ian, apart from asking you, did you feel you made the right choice there for 1975?
Did I what, sorry?
Did you feel you made the right choice with girls?
Well, no, because they're not the other ones.
Very true. That's exactly so.
Halfway through, I thought I wish I'd showed West Wang, actually.
Yeah. Wet Wang. Yep. Okay, while women admitted the following milestones filled her with more confidence, such as getting the first job. Were you filled with confidence when you got your first job, Eleanor? Well, you started coordinating the sports centre at the University of Lincoln. So do it that way.
Well, my first job was at a Michelin-starred restaurant, so it was a very stressful environment to work in. So I was pretty much just on the verge of having a nervous breakdown for the 6 months I was working there.
Was that in Wet Wang or was it in the surrounding
area? It was
area?
Near Beverly, so it was about 15 minutes from Wet Wang. Yeah,
very good, very good. Having a child, well, Rory, I don't know if you want to share. No. Is it possible?
Tell us about your experience.
I feel like you pick on me for these such weird things. No. Like you said I was 70 years old earlier.
Well, if you were 70, you were bound to have some kids.
Well, you say bound, you might have decided to actually keep reducing his carbon footprint.
I'll be lying about somewhere. Hang on, let me have a look.
Steady. And moving into the first home, apparently, is very important as a milestone to actually fill you with confidence. What are your milestones? Where did you actually start being filled with confidence, Ian?
I don't think I was ever a very, very confident person because I had a very bad memory.
Oh.
And it meant that I was limited.
Then you forget why you should be scared, surely. You forget why you should be frightened or scared. Just carry on regardless.
Well, I was always worried in case I made some catastrophic mistake when I was doing reporting and stuff.
I mean, because I had
such a terrible memory.
When you're interviewing Joe Harvey, you refer to Joe Harvey, manager of Newcastle United, as Bill Shankly. I know, it's the day. It happens. Never
that bad.
Well, exactly. There we are, you see, building that whole thing through. Well, we'll be featuring presenter and former model, of course, Lisa Snowden, talking about her challenges with respect to that and how you can actually sort of see the whole notion of how confidence can develop. Apparently the biggest confidence knock of all, the end of a relationship. It's all over. Destroyed. It's all over. Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please?
I can, Alex. Ian, have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
Oh, yes. Not much football today for some reason. But
I was about to say.
Well,
I wonder why.
Yeah. No mention of Manchester City, I gather.
Yeah, 2-0 to Wolves.
I mean, I was going to talk about the Rugby World Cup, but unfortunately England's game has been cancelled because of a typhoon and various other things that are happening there, so more about that. So.
Do they actually play the game now? There's some talk about Scotland and the game being cancelled as well, and they're out if they don't play it. So.
With all respect to football, I feel like if there's a typhoon in an area, the headline being, oh, but England's game's been cancelled, seems like, you know, they're missing the point of the big catastrophe that is a typhoon.
Yeah, but it's like the news yesterday when somebody died on the train tracks and people were like, oh, you know, 300, you know, London commuters' trains were delayed. It's like, well, the person died.
Fergus Jeffs was delayed again because of the challenge on the trains.
Something like, war breaks out in Bolivia, no one from the northeast involved.
Exactly. And that's basically because you're all war Geordies. Let's move on because I think we have to. And obviously, Rory, this is the International Rugby World Cup, not football. Obviously, football's far more important. Anyway, that's a different line. Did you ask me a second question?
I didn't. Ian, will you be coming back again very soon?
I do hope so, especially if they lose at Man City.
It's international break, Ian, so just let it go. That's the important thing. I mean, honestly.
Let it go. Yeah. You never let me forget about Tottenham. I get it every lecture, every seminar.
Do you? Yeah, right.
I do, all the time.
We must meet up and form a plan.
We must, yes.
Sometimes one just has to say, we're outnumbered. Then I can only tell you one thing. On the nights you feel outnumbered, baby, I'll be out there somewhere. I see everything you can be. I see the beauty. And so it goes, Diana Ross at Glastonbury. Amazing. Weather for Lincoln, highs of 14 degrees centigrade today, lows of 12 degrees centigrade, and it's going to be a day of sunny intervals with a fresh breeze. I saw the reason, doctor, he's a much the beginning, the onset of the season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, and the time where, in essence, if you happen to be a grizzly bear, you might sort of think, okay, it's time to actually stock up and, oh, go into hibernation. Well, it seems it's not just our wonderful, friendly mammalian cousins across the other side of the Atlantic and far up in the northern hemisphere that will actually hibernate, but it seems, as well as that, tortoises and other such life forms, British folk as well, are admitting to winter hibernation as the nights grow longer, becoming less engaged with a whole variety of things and basically just not coping with the cold, dull, grey, depressing conditions that we find ourselves. Jet 2 have actually produced a new survey to outline this. So our response is clearly bring on board ace psychologist and happiness expert, the fabulous Miriam Akhtar. How are you, Miriam?
I'm well at the moment. Well. Winter hasn't set in quite yet.
That's important. No, I mean, I know that there are probably many politicians, we won't name them, that probably wish they could actually just go into hibernation until something has actually ended or not, as the case may be, but let's not go there. Maybe the rest of the country will as well. But what is this research that suggests that actually, yeah, ultimately, the nights are beginning to draw in. We obviously, back end of October, we have the clocks go back an hour. And we just sort of think, oh, we can't cope. It's just time to go to sleep.
Well, new research from Jet2 Holidays shows that just over half of us admit to going into hibernation during the winter. So as the days become shorter and the nights become darker, it's only about a third of us plan for the weekend. So we sort of tend to hunker down, close the curtains, and not emerge until next spring.
So why is that? Is that kind of built into our genetic capacities as human beings? I mean, I shared at the start of the piece, obviously, that there are kind of, you know, certainly other animals, which as a matter of course will hibernate, conserve food and so on and so forth. Is that something we kind of share with that? Because it seems a little bit unusual that humanity has never quite managed to conquer this winter blues system.
Well, what's going on with us is that as the days get shorter, there's less daylight, so the brain produces more melatonin, which is that sort of sleepy feeling, so it induces sleep. But the trouble is, this can leave us feeling really quite lethargic, and the remedy is really to sort of be more active. And in fact, the research from Jet2 Holidays shows that three-quarters of us believe that the remedy for the winter blues is to take a break, whether that's to go on a sun break, winter sun, or really embrace the spirit of the season and get out on the ski slopes. But the cue is that rather than giving in to this urge to hibernate, the remedy is actually the opposite, to be more active, whether it's being physically active, mentally active, socially active. We do need to have a certain amount of activity to sort of build our physical and mental well-being. And physical well-being is very much the thing that promotes mental well-being as well. So rather than giving in to the season, if we want to feel better, the answer is to be more active mentally, physically, and socially.
Well, I suppose the classic line, mens sana in corpore sanus, healthy mind, healthy body, kind of echoes down the ages. And is
Absolutely. Is it
a case of it's simply a matter of being positive to stay positive?
Oh, that's an interesting point. I think it's all of those, actually, because the sort of instinct is to, you know, close the curtains and light a fire and, you know, drink lots of hot chocolate, etc. You know, then we do, you know, the instinct is to sort of stay on the couch for until next spring. But actually, as humans, we are designed to be active. So actually doing stuff, finding something that engages you. And this is where travel can be really help you. It gives you something to look forward to. It helps you to be active, you know, finding something that you would enjoy doing, you know, going on a break not only helps you to relax, it's a break from the routine, but it gives you something to engage your attention as well. And it gives you a new experience as well. And travel helps you into flow, which is that delicious state of being in the zone when you're completely absorbed in what you're doing. And of course, it's also a way of being physically active in a different way, you know, whether it's sailing or swimming or, you know, on a beach or going skiing in winter. You know, it gives you that opportunity to do something different. And when you do something different, that's really engaging. And engagement is one of the major ways to higher well-being.
And presumably the fact that you get the added benefits this time of year, destinations being maybe a little less crowded because you haven't got the school vacations on board. Costs might be a little bit cheaper as well. There's a bit more of a reason and rationale to do that. Although, as we said at the start of the piece, maybe you just need to be a little bit wary with respect to travel in Europe after October 31st. But that's a different line entirely, which we can't go into. It'll set us all back.
I think we're all going to need a winter break then, aren't we?
Absolutely. Miriam, where can people go to find out more details about Jet 2 Holidays and this particular research as well?
Well, if you go to winteryourway.jet2holidays.com, there is a quiz that you can take which will reveal your winter holiday personality type, and there's an opportunity to win one of six different types of winter holiday, and you'll also be entered into a draw to win all six holidays and get a discount off your winter holidays. So that's winteryourway.jet2holidays.com.
Sounds absolutely awesome. And Miriam, any particular place that you would be checking out over the winter months? So it's a case of, no, I'm a happiness expert, I must stay here keeping people happy.
Well, I must admit, when I start smelling wood smoke, I start thinking of pine forests and snow and that fresh mountain air. But this year, I'm actually thinking of getting some winter sun. That's what I want to do. Sit on a beach somewhere in February and March and just absorb all of that sunshine.
And, of course, good for vitamin D as well, of course. A different life entirely. Miriam Akhtar, psychologist and happiness expert. Many thanks indeed. Happy holidays.
And to you too.
away they go as we await the connections with Lucy Porter, which is still hopefully being put together as we speak. It's time to move from St. Etienne to Hugh Cornwall and the Stranglers on Siren Radio. Skin deep. And certainly if you want comedy that's more than just skin deep and surface gloss and actually deep and meaningful and impressive and connected on all sorts of wonderful levels, you have to go to the awesomely talented actress and comedian extraordinaire. It's Lucy Porter. How are you, Lucy?
Oh, my goodness, what an introduction.
Lucy,
it's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about me.
No, I can't believe that, Lucy. It's only right that we actually call them as we see them right at the start here. And again, with your regular fringe shows, etc., I use the line, always warm, witty and thought-provoking. It's adjectives that just define every little piece you actually do, which is wonderful. So it's going to be magical. Lucy, this particular survey, which we've discussed briefly on the programme so far this morning in terms of working parents, etc., and indeed, we have in the studio three fine souls, all of who are in their early 20s, so, you know, to experience this, I know. It's
Young, innocent, tender-footed things that they are.
Exactly.
I'm here like the ghost of Christmas future. So you how wrong it's going to all go.
Well, we have Rory McGowan from Bedfordshire, currently reading Creative Writing and Journalism at the University of Lincoln. We also have, just clearing her throat in the background there, because she is actually a resident in Wetwang, North Yorkshire, of course. Actually, you know, East Riding's of Yorkshire, that's Eleanor, also reading Journalism and Public Relations.
Hello.
And we also have Emma Street, who is also a Public Relations and Communications soul at the University of Lincoln. And I think it's fair to say, Emma, that when we were talking about some of the challenges that hard-working parents actually have to deal with and taking time to chill out, it's not good, is it?
It's not good, no.
It's not good. Lucy, what is it? What is the problem that actually sort of stops us from chilling out? Is it the infamous school run, or is that just the tip of the iceberg?
Well, it is. It's the tip of a very big iceberg, but it's quite a spiky tip, because most of the parents who were interviewed for this research by Churchill have said that the 6 to 9 a.m. slot is where they feel particularly stressed out. And I mean, I kind of get, this is probably across the board for most people, that getting ready in the morning is quite stressful and there's always stuff that you haven't done. But I think with children, it kind of ups the ante a bit because for some reason, children have no sense of urgency. It's sort of like trying to train a cat, I always think, with children. You know, like, I thought children were going to be more like dogs. I thought it was going to be all affection and love and obedience. And it turns out they're very much more like cats, in the same way that every time I try and take my cats to the vet, it's always a massive surprise and they resist in the hugest possible way. The children every morning seem to be surprised that we're going to school and affronted that I'm asking them to put their shoes on, as if this is some unreasonable demand that they've never heard before in their lives. And they're like, "What? Clean my teeth? What do you mean, clean my teeth, woman? Why would I be expected to do that?" And it is like every single day, it's as hard as the day before. It feels like this sort of, you know, this Herculean task, getting the kids ready. And then, of course, who decided that we all go to work and school and everything at the same time of day? It's absolutely batty. We should all just do our own thing on our own schedule. So we should all just be allowed to drift in to work and school whenever we feel like it and then drift out again at the end of the day. That's my philosophy.
57% have actually said in this survey that between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. is the time of day that they're most stressed. I mean, from what you've just said, Lucy, it seems to be that we need to check our circadian rhythms and maybe sometimes do a night shift, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I think my children would be very happy if school began at about 2 in the afternoon when they've had time to, you know, watch a bit of telly, chill out a bit, do a bit of Lego, and then they could sort of pop into school for a couple of hours and then knit back.
But Lucy, they do that when they get to university, surely. I mean, that's the way
well,
forward.
Well, you have young people there who, I hope that you young people are enjoying this time of your life and get as much sleep as you can because... Yeah. You know, people in their teens need a lot of sleep. They do. And store it up because there will be a time where, like, because the problem is, you see, a lot of parents, I think sleep becomes the first casualty of parenting because not only do the kids keep you awake, but when you do have some time to chill out, then that eats into your sleeping time. So I'm terrible for this. I know I should go to bed when I get the chance because the kids are going to be up at 6:30, whatever. But I find myself, you know, telly's too good now. This is the problem. See, I'm old enough to remember when we only had, like, 3 or 4 channels, and they all finished. After the news at 10, they used to play the national anthem and say, "That's it, off you go to bed, unplug your TV." And it was great. But now we've got Netflix and we've got all this stuff where you can entertain yourself all night, and it's very hard not to stay up.
I sense the pain, Lucy. I sense the pain coming across there in terms of this 24/7 media-based culture. Let's turn to Rory. Rory, I mean, you're nodding very sagely there. Is this something which is going to put you off having children ever? Or is it a case of, no, I recognise that. In fact, I am that person Lucy's talking about.
Well, no, I have to ask, Lucy, how old are your children?
They are 7 years old and 9 years old, Rory.
Wow. Oh, okay.
You're right in the thick of it. It's like Vietnam, though.
It is. They're full of fun. Yeah. That's how I say it. They're very lively, very spirited is the code that we use for actually quite hard work.
Because as you know, you grow from being a kid to a teenager into an adult, your sleep cycle changes dramatically. You go from, you know, sleeping for longer hours and then having the most energy, you know, in the morning at, like, say, 7 o'clock.
Just in time for the school run, obviously.
Well, yeah. To more naturally, when you're an adult, kind of going to bed later and waking up later. But weirdly, in a kind of backwards way, school starts at, like, 9 o'clock for younger people, but then when you move on to, like, secondary school, it's, like, 8 o'clock, sometimes even earlier.
Lucy, is this the key thing that basically we start a campaign today that it can be hitherto referred to as the LP Lucy Porter campaign day to effectively get our timetable set through and forget Brexit, forget Turkey, forget all the other sort of international issues that are actually there, forget the typhoon that's going to take out some of the Rugby World Cup? You know, is this where it should be happening, Lucy?
Yeah, well, I would be delighted to be the face of this campaign for LP's Lions.
I like it. Thanks, yeah, it's got alliteration.
We can have a lion mascot.
Have a long-playing lie-in with Lucy Porter.
Yes, lovely, lovely. LP's Lions. Because, yeah, I think they did try it, didn't they, in Scandinavia, where they allowed teenagers to go into school later and said that there was an amazing book.
And we got Greta Thunberg as a result. You know, amazing. You know,
well, just, look at that, you see. It's already paid off. Imagine,
win-win
scenario. The world if we let teenagers have a lie-in.
Emma, that's a significant point. It's 26 minutes past 9 o'clock. If we let teenagers have a lie-in, you can save the world. Any questions for Lucy?
That's quite a statement, isn't it? It's very profound.
Never shying away from the importance.
I guess, is there anything coming from this report that parents can do then? Is there anything that they can do to make their time less stressful?
Or do they
stressful?
Just give up?
Or is it just inevitable?
Yeah. Well, we just moan. I mean, that is largely what parents enjoy doing. So thanks for letting me have that outlet. But, I mean, the other thing that people are doing is buying the time. So parents are spending an average of £249 a week on things like cleaners, taxis, food delivery, and ironing services, which I have to say, I read that and I thought, yes, I must admit, if I can outsource anything, if I can afford to and I feel comfortable doing it, then I will. In fact, my ultimate plan, as well as getting lie-ins for teenagers, is I think I'm going to try and work it out so that Deliveroo will come to my house in the morning, collect my children, take them to school, and then come back and bring me a hot breakfast.
Sounds good.
That, I think, would make my life a lot easier.
You fit in contributions to Siren Radio and media work at the same time. It's be phenomenal. Clearly, I would mention the essential notion of going to lucyporter.co.uk as a fantastic website for all things Lucy Porter. But is there another website related to this survey that you'd like to mention as well, Lucy?
There is. Well, yes. So Churchill, who are the insurance company who sponsored this research, largely to highlight how easy and chilled out it is to take out insurance with them. They have their website, which I'm sure your listeners will be able to find. And on that website also, I was going to mention that they've revamped the Churchill dog, which is called...
I know.
My Twitter over the weekend was alive.
Wait, they have?
I mean, the days of Vic and Bob or Bob Mortimer doing his kind of thing and all that, that's all gone. It's all gone.
Oh, no.
I love the way Alex is sounding like, those days
exactly,
are gone.
Exactly. I feel it's the beginning of the end of civilization. I just need to ask you, Lucy, would you prefer The Beatles and Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds or Marianne Faithfull and The Ballad of Lucy Jordan? Which one would you go for?
Oh, you're spoiling me with riches. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't often hear the Marianne Faithfull.
And it is a classic.
Should we go niche rather than popular?
Fantastic. And two final questions for you. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Lucy Porter?
I absolutely loved this. I feel like I've been absorbing the youth from your studio. Yeah. I feel like I'm rejuvenated now.
Not that we're suggesting, Lucy, that you've got vampiric tendencies to actually suck the youth out of the whole thing, because that's a different line entirely. But would you be kind enough to return? Will you come back and join with us in another programme sometime down the way?
Well, I'd be delighted. I will be on tour in the Lincolnshire area at some time soon, I'm sure, so I shall pop in and say hi.
I think it's time for a round of applause for Lucy Porter.
Yay! And a round of applause back for you.
Oh, anyway, for her to spend a day.
the house for hours. Rearrange the flower, or a naked through the shady street, screaming out the way. At the age of 37, she realized she'd never ride through Paris in a sports car with the warm wind in her head. So she left. She climbed when all the laughter grew too loud. Then she bowed and cursed to the man who reached and offered her his hand, and he led her down to the long white car that waited past the
back in the day, there are many of us who would actually recall the exploits of a certain Eddie the Eagle Edwards. Thankfully, we've actually got a much, much, much better person to actually talk about the future of skiing and hopefully leading to Winter Olympic success. It is the awesome Ski Sunday TV presenter and adventurer, the fabulous Graham Bell. How are you, Graham?
I'm very good, thank you.
Excellent. And also today, to actually talk about the future of skiing and so on, who better than futurologist extraordinaire? It's Dr. Ian Pearson. How are you, Ian?
Oh, pretty good, thanks.
Excellent. Actually, Ian, have you skied in your time? Are you a keen skier?
I used to be, but then I had a motorbike accident which put an end to all of that sort of thing for me, unfortunately. But I did enjoy it when I used to do it.
Well, that's good. Now, Graham, turn to your good self. I mean, apart from the fact that clearly you've set so many wonderful examples from your own point of view as a Winter Olympic skier, why is it that more and more British folk are choosing to actually ski?
Well, I think it's a fun thing to do, personally. And we're looking through the Club Med ski report that's just been published this year. And Dr. Ian has been contributing to that with what's going to be happening in the future. But I think one of the main points that came out of the report for me was the fact that it's a lot of fun, and it's actually really good for you kind of to go skiing, to get in the, you know, to get out in the Alps. And you can do it as part of a family as well. I think it's one of those sports that you can do, you know, with your grandkids. You wouldn't see, a kind of three generations going on a summer holiday necessarily together, but you see it all the time on the ski slopes.
Very much so. The French Alps, as you mentioned, number one destination. 33% of us headed off there in 2019. Of course, there's Switzerland, there's Austria, there's Italy, Canada, USA, Japan. Graham, you're probably far too young to remember Franz Klammer, and he sort of was, I mean, I mentioned Eddie the Eagle Edwards, etc., but I think Franz Klammer was many ways the gold standard for competitive skiing, would you say?
No, I got to race against Klammer. I was 18 years old. Did my first World Cup race, raced in Kitzbühel against him. He won the Hahn and Kamm, which is the biggest race on the World Cup circuit. He won that in 84, and it was the first year that I raced. He's a wonderful guy as well. I've got to meet him a few times since,
that's good.
Hero of mine, Klammer.
Good to hear.
It is indeed good to hear that Franz Klammer is a hero of Graham Bell, Ski Sunday presenter. And more of that later, because, yeah, extra added bonus. We weren't sure that she'd be with us. We were prompted into all sorts of things, but she's back off the ferries. It's Chloe Rose. How are you, Chloe?
Yay, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
very well indeed, and you know, obviously proving that the universe is just one collective cosmos. Emma Street was actually saying, "When's Chloe back on the show?"
And I surprised me there. this is wonderful. Hello.
Hi, Emma.
Hi.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, lovely.
So it's all good, you see. I mean, we hadn't had a sort of full confirmation, so we weren't sure whether she was, but she is, and that's always the important thing. So what were you doing on the ferries then, Chloe, apart from singing?
I was eating food. You know what one of the great things about the job was on there was that all the food was included. So I tell you now, I was up till 2:30 in the morning some nights because I was loving the music. Yeah. And there was a lasagna, right, on the side that you could eat. And I thought, you know what, I'm sticking it in the microwave. Wow. 3 minutes, fantastic. You know, if you've got food, you've got music, what more do you want?
Sounds perfect.
It is indeed. Also in the studio, Rory McGowan. Have you met Chloe, Rory?
I haven't.
The delights of meeting Chloe Rose, Cleethorpes' finest, effectively. And I say that quite deliberately. She is the finest Cleethorpes has ever produced. It's a fact. Yeah, we have that sort of thing from that point of view. Former Miss Lincolnshire. And indeed, as defined last night by Eva MacDonald as, well, Chloe, she's a pageant girl. She's a pageant girl. Anyway, Chloe, you're back with us. We know hopefully it won't be too long before you're in the studio with us because we need to have you back in the studio. We need to coordinate that. I know you rehearse on Wednesday nights, etc. But we've got a newbie in the studio. Yes. We've got Eleanor Lodge in the studio. Eleanor, who's been with us now for like an hour and 30 minutes because she's a little bit late, but that's okay. Yes.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Eleanor's from a little bit further north than you. She comes from a place in East Yorkshire called Wet Wang.
I feel like I should have counted how many times
that's been
said now.
I think, well, first show, very important.
You always get grilled on your first day.
And we are teasing ahead to potentially the Wet Wang Scarecrow Festival, which, of course, is an annual event. That's actually that. And I'm sure, Chloe, we could actually do a location report at the Wet Wang Scarecrow Festival. What do you think?
Yes, it sounds very good. I mean, is it scary, Scarecrow? I mean, you know.
I wouldn't say scary. Entertaining, but it's very gentle. It's not scary.
So it's not scary.
Yeah, it's not vicious, you know.
You don't have lots of sort of countdown people effectively bumping out of various things saying, Richard Whiteley is not dead, you know, he's a zombie or something. No, never mind. Chloe, how is the songwriting going?
Oh, it's going very well. Mm-hmm. I'm writing in and out, so it's nice when you get new experience. When you travel, you meet new people. And also, French people are lovely, because on the ferry, we go from Portsmouth to France. Oh, they're lovely.
Uh-huh.
Ever so nice. And you know, it's nice because you get to meet all different cultures, all walks of life, and that's the thing. So I've now been to France. I've never been to France before, so that's been done. I went to St. Malo, and it was lovely to spend the day there, because we had, like, one where we could go and visit and go over there. So that was, it's brilliant to meet new people and visit new places, and there you go.
It's just wondrous. And as I say, before too long, we're coordinating, which you can maybe join us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, but we'd probably have to organise all sorts of other pieces. We'll get it there. We'll get it sorted through. Chloe, we need to head off, because we've got a couple more things to actually work through, but I'll ask Rory to put those last two questions to you. Rory, off you go.
Well, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show, Chloe?
I've had a lovely time. It's nice to speak to Emma again. It's nice to meet some of you that I haven't spoken to before. I'm glad to be back, Alex, and I'm glad to be back, Rory, as well.
And I hope you can then join us again soon, maybe, as Alex said, in the studio.
Definitely.
It'll happen. It will work through. Chloe Rose, take care of yourself. Keep on keeping on. We'll be playing more Chloe Rose numbers before too long. Here is Sister Sledge.
So Chloe Rose was using the ferry, and as we heard before that, our futurologist Ian Pearson and Ski Sunday presenter Graham Bell were also involved with that. What about pets, technology and environmental impacts influencing travel 10 trends for 2020? I thought Chloe's classic quote was, she thinks all French people are lovely now, which is great. And I'm sure she would also say that all travel trends experts from Booking.com, especially if they're Ryan Pearson, are even more wonderful. How are you, Ryan? How's life?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Good. So, over half of travellers surveyed in this particular number would opt for a lesser-known destination if it reduced the environmental impact. This is a report from Booking.com, which predicts the top travel trends for 2020. Were you surprised by these tech-commendations?
There were a few surprises in there. I would say the first one that you mentioned there about the pets, 55% of people saying that their pet is as important to them when they're thinking about going on a trip as their children. That's a bit of a standout stat. So there's a few surprises in there. So that's why our first trend that we would call pet priority, and that's about accommodations really reaching out to pet owners and being as accommodating as possible. And that's what our travellers are really looking for. So we're not just talking that they will accept pets, but they're talking dog baths or dog beds, cat menus, afternoon tea for dogs, crazy things. And the accommodations are really reaching out to the pet owners in that regard.
Particularly interesting to know that it's Montenegro, Argentina and Puerto Rico that are the trending destinations, in which we're also looking at, I love this actually, slow-mo is the new hashtag FOMO.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is about everybody's quite stressed out. Everybody spends their life connected. So it's about stepping away from that and the experience starting as soon as you leave your front door. The experience starts with the journey as well. So we see that in the UK with the relaunch of the overnight train up to the Highlands, and people are really looking for different forms of transport and just to slow the pace down and take in the experience as much as they can.
Yeah, the sleeper train. Who would have thought it would actually make a comeback? It's like suddenly we'd be back on the Orient Express, but not traveling to the Orient, traveling up to Edinburgh. Rory, any questions that you'd like to put to Ryan about holidays, or does this resonate with yourself? I mean, you'd be checking out your holiday destinations, no doubt, having just come back from the States.
Well, maybe. So, Ryan, about the pet-friendly holidays, is this a kind of a big market that I'm unaware of? And are like holiday companies really kind of big now on maybe letting out stuff that is more pet friendly than they used to be?
I mean, I think definitely accommodations are responding to the demands of pet owners. So like I say, 40% of people want to take their pet. It's very important to them, and we see accommodations that have these pet-centric offerings, which it can be the from the dog bed up to the blankets. And I was speaking to somebody this week who'd been somewhere and they had afternoon tea for dogs and they had Prosecco instead of Prosecco, whatever that may be. So the accommodations are really tailoring their offering to the pet owners.
Oh, we'll just take a pause for thought on that particular moment there, because we've already had lots of pause scenarios. Emma, any thoughts from yourself?
I think recently it's really important to maybe go to some lesser-known places, because obviously there's a big thing about tourism at the moment and the damaging effects it's having to overcrowding in places. Is there any kind of places that you'd recommend going to, or perhaps places we should be avoiding so that we're not damaging environments?
Well, I think that's definitely a trend that we see. We've called it second city travel. So it's driven by two things. One, people's awareness of potential environmental impact and over-tourism. And secondly, they just want to get off the beaten track and go somewhere a bit alternative or quirkier. So the ones that we really see, we've taken the top 1,000 destinations and looked at the fastest growing. We see places like Salta in Argentina. So that's well away from Buenos Aires, which is renowned for its steaks and tango and wine, and people are heading away from there and going to somewhere that Salta has colonial architecture, really colourful languages, colourful landscapes. So really,
they
really
might
nice
have colourful languages as well, of course, but we wouldn't use it on a broadcast medium, clearly.
Yeah, and then I think we see San Juan in Puerto Rico. That's a place that's recovering from a hurricane in 2017. So people may be making their choice there because they want to help rebuild the destination. And there are places in Europe as well, Shabilac, which is in Montenegro, so away from the Mediterranean coast, actually a small skiing destination. Places like that we see in the top 1,000 that are really, really fast growing.
Sounds absolutely awesome. Eleanor, any particular thoughts from yourself to just wrap up the whole piece?
Yeah, well, no, I can definitely relate to the wanting to take your pet with you on holiday. I was just wondering if that's more of a within sort of the country you live in thing, or are people taking...
Will we be seeing pets going to Puerto Rico? That's the thing, you know.
Well, we have pet passports, so yeah, I think it's a global survey, so there's 22,000 people surveyed globally, 1,000 in the UK, but the figures, like 55%, suggest that this is a global phenomenon, really, and people are taking it really seriously.
It's been phenomenal. Where can people go to find out more details, Ryan?
They can go to booking.com, and all the details are on there about the survey and the places to go in the next year.
Fantastic. Ryan, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with yourself. And I still like the slow-mo as the new FOMO. Very good. Just take time to relax on the whole system. Ryan, take care. We'll speak again soon. Bye for now.
Thank you.
When I first saw you, I saw love. And the first time you touched me, this time, you're still the one I love.
Looks like we made it. Look how far we've come, my baby. We might have took the long way. We knew we'd get there someday. They said, I bet they'll never make it. But just look at us holding on. We're still together, still going strong.
Still,
you're still the one I run to, the one that I belong to. You're still the one I want for life.
Still,
you're still the one that I love, the only one I dream of. You're still the one I kiss goodnight. Ain't nothing better. We beat the odds together. I'm glad we didn't listen. Look at what we would be missing.
Exactly. Look at those milestones that you miss in so many ways. And you can certainly say that there is only one individual who, when you want to wrap up a programme and actually talk about a particularly key notion such as milestones and confidence, etc., it has to be the awesome broadcaster and model, Lisa Snowden. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Lisa, how are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm really well. Thank you for talking to me this morning.
Well, you are the one, basically. You're still the one and always will be. Now, this particular research that suggests, again, about confidence, that British men reach peak confidence before women and so on, we shared it in the first part of the programme with a number of our contributors. They tended to agree from that point of view. Getting a first job, having a child, moving into the first home. I think in the studio we have three folk who might be adopting one of those, moving into their first home. They're currently undergraduates at the University of Lincoln. But we surprised by this particular system, or was it something which you thought, yeah, I acknowledge that ultimately giving birth is the best confidence routine you can ever have?
I mean, I wasn't surprised. I thought that, you know, 70s, they've obviously done this perfect seven confidence curve, and this, they did men and they've trialed women as well. And I think it's, for me, it makes sense because men, the first most important milestone in your lives was passing your driving test. Well, for me, that wasn't even on my radar. So much so that I didn't even pass my test until I was 38. It didn't bother me. That wasn't even something that was, you know, exciting for me. But for me, like getting my first job, that's a game changer. You know, that for me was when I just felt like, yes, I've arrived. You know, my confidence was peaked, and I got really excited about having that independence and feeling more in control. And then obviously men like moving into your house, you know, buying a first home, that's obviously a very important milestone as well as for women having a baby. But, you know, I thought it was interesting because as we get to our 50s, us women, it spikes really dramatically. And I'm in my late 40s now, and it makes absolute sense. You know, you sort of get to that stage where you just don't worry about what people think about you so much. You know, you don't sweat the small stuff. You don't worry about these silly little insignificant things that, you know, in the scheme of things are nothing. You know, maybe if you have had children, they've grown up a bit, you've got more time for you. So it totally makes sense to me.
So in the studio, then, we should have three people who are probably quite lacking in confidence. Let's try Eleanor. What's your own thought on this one?
No, I definitely agree with it. I think it's just that men don't think into things as much. I think... Well, in my experience,
we don't think into things as much.
I think
she's not wrong.
Rory kind of agrees on that sort of point of view. I mean, Emma, is this something that you say is?
No, I can see where Eleanor's coming from there. We do tend to overthink. I think as women, we sweat on the small stuff much more. I can see myself getting more confident in time, but I don't think I've reached my peak confidence in my 20s at all.
Rory, was passing your driving test a significant milestone, or have you yet to achieve that?
I haven't passed my driving test yet. But
you're still quite nervous then, Lisa, obviously.
No, I'm chill.
You're chill?
For a lack of a better word, I don't really... I have a good ability to not really mind what people who are quite inconsequential to me think of me.
Quite inconsequential to you.
I mean, well, as in, like, if I drop my phone or something stupid, or I do something stupid in public, and I mean, and people start looking at me or something, it's not like I'm now going, oh God, they all think I'm an idiot. I'm just like, well, you know,
Lisa.
Whatever.
Any thoughts on that? I mean, is Rory right from that point of view?
No, I mean, I like that Rory's chill. That's really good. So good for you. Are you living in a nice, are you happy where you're living? Maybe that's contributing to your confidence more so than the driving. You know, so that's one of my questions to you. And then secondly, it's not just about people that you don't know caring about, like, what they think. It's about, you know, people you work with or people that you do know, or even, you know, just people like that are in your kind of circle, just sort of like being a little bit more insecure about how they might react to something you might say. You know, I think as you get a bit older, you start to kind of like know yourself a bit better and not be afraid to have an opinion or to kind of, you know, say something that could be considered, you know, a bit radical or outside of the box.
So in terms of where I live, that currently my family home, I just really love it, where I'm living in Lincoln right now for university. It could be better. My
better,
bath was...
Better in Lincoln? Could be better.
Well, I mean, it's university halls, so, you know. There was a problem, like a really big problem with a clogged drain in our house for the last week, to the point where the bath was full of water for several days. But I immediately, as soon as I saw the problem, just went out and... wanted to get it fixed. In that kind of regard, there's no like good reason for not getting it fixed, because it will then start to smell, and that's when you get your problem.
I think it's fair to say, Rory, that when Lisa started off these particular radio interviews this morning, she hadn't expected to actually incorporate clogged drains.
Yeah, I know. She asked me if I was confident, and where I was living made me confident, and I was like, I feel like
regardless of confidence, though, if you've got a block drain, you're going to get it fixed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know some, I think I know some people who would kind of maybe deliberate on that and go, oh, but I don't want to, it's going to be a hassle if I have to talk to the property owners and or the landlord and that sort of thing.
I sort of see the point, but at the end of the day, I still think it's taking us a little bit tangential. Lisa, I mean, what can I say?
Maybe. Okay, yeah.
This is one of the reasons why the way you handled that clearly marks you out as the best ever Capital Radio breakfast presenter they ever had. Why they let you go in 24, I just don't know, frankly. It's just go and go with that, because, you know, if you want a woman to actually sort out callers who might have blocked drains, that's the one, you know, and confidence.
That's my speciality usually, but we're not here to talk about that,
no,
are we?
No, it's very true. So,
all right, okay.
So let's let's talk about, briefly, as we conclude this extraordinary, tangential, sort of almost surreal aspect, where could people go to find out further details about this confidence survey and so on?
Yeah, so all the information is on 7Cs, it's 7-Cs, .com. All the information's on there, all of the different Perfect 7, 7Cs Perfect 7, all of the different ingredients, the omega-3 that's in there, and all of the multivitamin and the minerals, all the good stuff that makes up the Perfect 7. All the information on there, and it's about, you know, feeling your best. And not just, you know, not just the emphasis on the outside, it's about the inside as well. And as we get older, that obviously becomes more and more important. So all the information you need is on there. And it is an amazing survey, loads of information and loads of good stuff.
And that clearly, this is why, as we said, you become experientially enhanced, one becomes chronologically gifted, and it's just absolutely wonderful. Lisa, two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
It's been special. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, at least we've helped with clogging drains. And you do have now a go-to person in terms of if anybody in the world is actually looking for a man to have confidence with sorting out your blocked drains, Rory is the go-to person. It's genius.
Never mind, Alex.
And Lisa, will you be kind enough to return sometime?
Absolutely. Yes, I'd love to.
Yay! A round of applause, please, for Lisa Snowden. Magical.
Thanks, Rory. Thanks, Alex.
Me and Kurt feel the same. Too much pleasure is pain. My girl spites me in vain. All I do is complain. She needs something to change. Need to take off the ass. So get all tonight. And don't tell me.
Post Malone featuring Young Thug sees us out of the program with the usually wonderfully titled Goodbyes, because we're saying our goodbyes now. Thanks certainly to Phil Lynn, who kicked off the program, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Lucy Porter, Miriam Akhtar, and of course the wonderful Ryan Pearson, Chloe Rose, and Lisa Snowden, awesome contributors, plus very briefly Graham Bell, of course, and futurologist Ian Pearson. Have you enjoyed your first experience on Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Eleanor Lodge?
I have, yes. It's been informative. I feel like I've learnt a lot in the last 2 hours.
You know how to call if you've got problems with your drains now.
I do, yes.
It's more than that. Emma, what about yourself? Okay for yourself?
Yes, more
good,
than okay.
Good.
Really enjoyed it.
Rory?
I'm feeling great. I'm feeling absolutely wonderful, Alex.
Marvellous.
No sarcasm in that at all.
Don't forget, later on today, just after 7 o'clock, we've got From Mantis to Molecules, Episode 4. Lots of great stuff happening, of course, with the Siren News team throughout the day here on Siren Radio. News coming up in a matter of moments from now. Thanks, certainly, as we mentioned, in the studio to Rory McGowan, Eleanor Lodge and Emma Street. All we need to do now is close off, or clothes off. I couldn't resist it, something which was talked about. No, it's certainly not going to be the latter. But can we say happy Thursday? One, two, three.
Happy Thursday.
Or happy World Mental Health Day.
Happy World Mental Day.
Let's say that.
Mental health, yeah. Mental health. Mental day.
Happy World Mental Health Day. I thank you.